You can now take KRBN Internet News Talk Radio with you on your mobile phone, as we are making it easier to listen to the great hosts here on KRBN, including our very own West Lane County Commissioner, Jay Bozovich. It's free and available on Google Play. Just look for player.fm. That's player.fm and search for KRBN.
Live from Lane County, Oregon, it's the Boz Knows Show with your host, West Lane County Commissioner Jay Bozovich. And now, here's Jay.
And good afternoon, and it's a gorgeous day in the Pacific Northwest. It's been gorgeous in the afternoons here for about a week, but the heck if I would know it. I've been locked inside meetings, seems like, the entire week. So I hope somebody's getting out there to enjoy it. Welcome to the Boz Knows Show as we come to you live from beautiful downtown Elmira, Oregon. And I'm your host, Jay Bozovich, West Lane County Commissioner, and this is a show where you get to control the conversation just by calling at 646-721-9887 and just press 1, and that lets Robin, my call screener and producer extraordinaire, know you want to get in on the show. And in fact, I'm hoping I'm going to get a call today from one of the candidates that's running for the Emerald People's Utility District Board of Commissioners, which is one of our local electric utilities here, public electric utilities. And we might get a chance to talk about things like rates and smart meters and other issues that apply there, and kind of find out what who the guy is and why he wants to run for the board. So we'll see if he calls in. If not, we got a lot to talk about on the Boz Knows Show. And I think I'm going to start out this show with going straight to what were they thinking. You know, that's our regular segment here on the Boz Knows Show, where we kind of just ask that question, what were they thinking? And I have to give the What Were They Thinking award to multiple people this week. That's why I'm going straight to it, because I just can't, it just amazes me. So around here, you know, they banned field burning, you know, because of, you know, all the smoke, and they had the big wreck on I-5 that one time when a field burn kind of got away and the smoke got over I-5 and caused this chain reaction collision. Well, fast forward, you know, 15 years or so, maybe 20 years, and now the only field burning that goes on is being done by conservation groups in the federal government, and it's part of a wetlands preservation or oak savanna preservation projects, which is a good thing. You know, it's a habitat that wouldn't naturally occur in the Willamette Valley if it weren't for fire. And of course, fire doesn't naturally occur in the Willamette Valley very often because it doesn't get a lot of lightning. But the Native Americans, the indigenous people here, used to burn the Willamette Valley, and that's why there was a lot of wet prairie, as they call it, and oak savanna in the Willamette Valley. And that habitat's kind of gone away as we stopped burning it, the whole entire valley. So some of the species associated with that habitat have become limited, and some of them even endangered. So they try and preserve it by doing these controlled burns. Well, a lot of that land that's this wetland preservation land is under the ownership of the Bureau of Land Management of the U.S. Department of Interior and the federal government. Well, they have permits through the local air protection agency, LRAPA, Lane Regional Air Protection Agency, for those burns. And that's kind of where things got a little sideways. LRAPA very intelligently put a have your fires out by 4 o'clock in their permit conditions, because everybody knows about this time of year. After 4 o'clock or so, the winds start to die down, and then in the evening, we get inversions. Well, BLM last Friday decided to start a burn after 4 o'clock and then didn't really put it out. So sometime about midnight when the inversion rolls in, it smoked in Highway 126 west between Eugene and Bonita, to where there was a multiple car accident there and they had to close the highway down. What were they thinking? What was BLM thinking at that time? They are just fortunate there was not a major injury or fatality involved in that accident, because somebody would be up on some kind of negligent homicide or endangering people. I don't know what the charge would be, but it's near criminal what they did. We got rid of fuel burning because of stuff like that. And it's like this, this environmental management technique using, controlled burns is for good reasons, but when you do it poorly and stupidly, you're going to make it also get banned. So it's just, I don't know. So BLM gets my What Were They Thinking award for the day. So, Robin, I see we got somebody on the line there. That's not my EPUD candidate, is it?
So far, it looks like they're just listening. Just push one, and I'll bring you online.
Yep. Yep, looks like they're pressing one.
I'm sorry.
Hi, caller, welcome to the show, Jake Bolchevich.
Yeah.
Hey.
This is Bent Mickelson.
Oh, hi, Bent. So, first of all, I just want, it is Bent Mickelson, is that correct?
Yes, it is.
Great.
Yep.
I know there's a little bit of time.
I live in... That's okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I just want to, real quick, you're running for the Emerald People's Utility District Board of Directors. And I want you real quick to give a brief bio of why you're running.
I can't hear it, Shereen. I'm sorry. I'm traveling in the car and I'm jostling my earpiece and the speakerphone. Now I'm on to earpiece here. So my apologies for, could you ask the question again, Jay?
Sure. And actually, your sound is much better through the earpiece. I appreciate that.
Oh, good.
And I know how that Bluetooth gets messed up. I was asking if you could give me a brief bio and why you're running for the EPUD board.
So I've lived in the area in El Salvador for the last 14 years. I've raised my children, my family up here. I've been an EPUD customer for that time frame. This last winter, I came home from a trade show in Las Vegas where we do a large educational event as the publisher of a national trade magazine called Concrete Decor. And this educational event is designed to bring exhibitors from all facets of the concrete industry together and show the 60,000-70,000 attendees at that event how decorative and architectural concrete can work in unison with building systems that are designed to add strength, sustainability, energy efficiency to the building envelope. And so I came back from the show. I told my wife, Sherry, I said, Sherry, I just am so sick of the word concrete right now. I've been at this for 20 years. And right now I just feel like I need something else in my life that just kind of helps me to disengage for, a few hours each day or something like that. And no sooner did I say that, and a postcard came in the mail from EPUD, encouraging members or customers to submit a letter for the position that had opened up there, as one of the board directors was stepping down from their position there for health purposes. I took the interview. I got the job there, and really felt as though I immediately had to take a real deep dive into the energy market to fully understand the business side of it, and that I did, and actually really enjoyed the process. Felt as though that with each passing day, as I learned more, I started to see a stronger and stronger connection with the things that I know about construction processes, construction materials, and this thing of energy conservation, which at EPUD in particular, and I know other utility companies are very similar in mindset, energy conservation is a mandate. It's something that they've been tasked with because it's the least risky and most cost-effective way for utility companies to address this growing need for electric energy. And that's where I feel as though my qualifications as a business owner, as an employer in Lane County for many, many years, can help to serve the customers in my area and throughout the customer base for EPUD.
Yeah. So that kind of covers who you are and why you're running. Can we talk a little bit about what you're running for? Because not everyone that listens to the Bose Know Show might know where the Emerald People's Utility District boundaries are, but approximately what little towns, I'm an EPUD customer and I'm down here in Elmira, and you're an EPUD customer in Alvador. What other areas are within the EPUD service district?
Yeah, so Notai stretches out a little bit on 126 there, going towards Florence and Elmira, Vanita, Alvador, and some of the areas to the south and east of Alvador. You get over into off of Fir Butte Road and some of those areas. So it's a really spread out area. So the districts are a funky bunch of districts, but they represent the services where EPUD has power poles and lines running along the streets and underground, and so it's those areas that I find to be an interesting service area, because PUDs were designed to help that farmer out in Timbuktu, get energy. And, independent or investor-owned utility companies were just not interested in putting, several power poles in the line and miles of power line out to one farmer. But PUDs made that possible. So it's a great, opportunity in my mind to represent a customer base that in some ways reflects the very essence of why PUDs exist.
Yeah, pretty spread out. And when you think about Notai, that's a lot of line running out of there for not very many customers.
Right. Yeah.
Although a couple,
and it's
couple
you know
really
and those are some of the. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Jay.
I'd say a couple really big customers are the mills out there, though.
Say that again. I'm sorry.
That's it. A couple big customers with the two mills that are in Notai.
Yeah, yeah. And I believe there was a – was it out in that area? Maybe it was down in Corvallis that there was a fire that – or Cresswell – was it out there in Notai? I believe there was a fire at a mill out that way, but I know
that was
those...
Cresswell.
Was it? Okay, yeah. So that's, important customers, and certainly, EPUD looks at its commercial customers with as much enthusiasm and, eagerness to provide a level of support and customer service that that commercial customer can't find anywhere else. I think that's part of the responsibility that we have to our customers, to be, you know, the best service at the lowest possible price.
Yeah. So for folks out there, and it doesn't matter whether you're an EPUG customer, or eWeb customer, or Lane Electric customer, there's been a lot of talk about use of tiered rates versus flat rates. And I know that's been a little bit of a controversy even with EPUD. What do you think about that? So tiered rates where, you know, use a little bit of energy, you buy your electricity at a lower rate, the more energy you use, the more costly the electricity gets. Is that something you think is a good tool, or is that, kind of punishing the large family, or is it, what do you think of the use of tiered rates versus flat rates?
Yeah, it's a hot topic for sure, and I feel that words such as punitive, when people look at tiered rates, and by no means ever looked towards rates in that manner. That it wants to punish somebody for, the amount of energy that they use. That is as far from the truth as one could possibly imagine. But, tiered rates, as I understood them, because those were in place when I took the position as a director at EPUD. But the way I understood, tiered rates was that these were designed to kind of move the customer base towards energy efficiency, towards energy conservation. And the minute I understood that, I actually went home and talked to my family, about this. And I said, I think there's things, and I always talk about unplugging the kegerator in the garage because, it sat out there and kept a keg of cold beer warm strictly for my friends, and so I unplugged that thing, and suddenly I'm saving $40 a month, on keeping a keg of beer cold in the garage. And it was just little things like that that started to add up for me. And suddenly I found myself not in tier three, but now in tier two. And I thought, well, that was an easy process for me, I feel as though I'm being rewarded for the steps that I'm making towards energy conservation. So for me, it looked a lot different. I've heard a lot, from the customers that talk about tiered rates and the fact that they have a large family and they're low income, and suddenly they're looking at a mortgage payment, at a utility bill, and what they have to spend on food, and suddenly it's a big question mark, and how am I going to cover my expenses, my living expenses? And I think for those types of customers, they have to reach out and ask questions. They have to talk to their utility company and say, what can I do? Can I be doing here to cut my energy use and not make life miserable for myself? Because that's certainly not the intent either. But we definitely have to look at the types of buildings that we reside in and the ways we live our life. If we're just living life in a rather gregarious and irresponsible way, I think there's room for improvement, and I think everybody can make those types of changes in their lives. I mean, this is our world is changing faster than we know it, or would like to think that it is. Technology is moving at the speed of light these days, and with that, those technological changes, electric vehicles are becoming, or will become, almost a mandate in many states around the country, because we state and federal government wants to cut down on CO2 emissions, and combustion engines are a big leading contributor to that problem. So we're going to see this move, this migration towards an electric, you know, a greater dependency on electrical services, and that has to be renewable green energy service, you know, sources as well. Fortunately, in the Northwest, we have a lot of that, and it should be understood that here in the Northwest, we have some of the best rates in the country. The best rates. We have such a predominance of hydroelectric power. Certainly, BPA has its challenges today, but it's really making strides today towards technological improvements that are simply going to, help that power generation, you know, business to more effectively service utility companies in the greater Northwest region, even California. So, it's the changes in technology also, you know, are being showcased in the new smart meters that are being installed, and it's not just EPUD that's doing that, but a lot of utility companies that are installing smart meters, because the utility company has an opportunity there to help its customer better. And that means that when it can look at your service and say, Jay, you know, there are things we see, your size home, your energy consumption from 11 to 4 o'clock each day is higher than the average. What are you doing at home during that time of the day? Because if you can change that habit, you can move yourself into a lower price bracket. That's going to be the way that utility companies charge for services in the future. It's no longer going to be a flat rate or a tiered rate, but it's going to be a demand charge or time of use that people are charged for. So it really means that we all, you know, tiered rates are just a stepping stone in that process. And that's the way I kind of looked at it when the tiered rates came up and people were wanting to go back to a two-tiered rates. In fact, our Finance and Rates Committee came back to us really undecided and very mixed on the subject of tiered rates. And a more recent Finance and Rates Committee fully supported the tiered rates. So it's just taken time, I think, for customers to understand it. You know, we're stepping into the second winter with tiered rates now. It could be a brutally cold winter, and I'll even be complaining about those damn tiered rates. But we have these alternatives that are not necessarily that healthy for the utility company either. And I think that is also something we have to concern ourselves with, is making sure that the utility company is operating to the best of its ability. It's operating safely. It's providing its people with safe equipment to operate. It's keeping, trees and all of those things at bay, so that when storms hit, we don't have a bunch of power outages because of these types of issues.
Yeah. So we're talking with Bent Mickelson here on the Bose Nose Show, and if you want to call in and ask Bent a question about EPUD or electrical utilities, you can give us a call here at the Bose Nose Show at 646-721-9887 and just press 1. It lets Robin, my call screener and producer extraordinaire, know you want to get on the conversation. Again, that's 646-721-9887 and just press 1. So, Ben, you hit smart meters, because that was one of the questions I was going to ask you about, because that's kind of also a hot topic in electric utilities. Probably you know, one of the things this is more particular just to EPUD, there's been some concern about compensation for board members and board member travel and stipends and all that in the past at EPUD. Has that kind of died down? I mean, that seemed to be a big issue maybe about 5 years ago, but I haven't heard much about it since.
Well, there is compensation. I wouldn't say that it's much to write home about. You know, for the amount of time that a board member spends on just keeping up to speed with, you know, the utility industry and everything that's going on there, you know, it can be a full-time job. You know, it's there's a lot of late nights and early mornings where I'm at the computer just trying to keep up to speed with all of the information that EPUD staff are sending our way, just article clips from Seattle and California and Portland, just on issues related to energy, related to dams, to, you know, forestry and all of the like. You know, there's so many pieces of the puzzle that can have, you know, influence on energy prices. So it's again, it's a lot of work. And I didn't take this job to be a because I was looking for added compensation. In fact, when I stepped into that office with the general manager a week after I had been nominated to the board, I sat down with Scott and we were talking about things, and it was only then that I was notified that there was some compensation associated with it. So I was simply looking for a way to serve my community. Now, you know, I think I might average maybe $1,200 a month, but that takes into account board meetings, one or two trips to Salem each month, or up to Portland for PPC meetings. My mileage is covered. So, you know, it's not a lot. You know, it's you know, pretty nominal. There's nothing else to it. You know, there's no healthcare benefits or anything like that. You know, it's we get paid to go to a trade show. If I'm there for 4 hours or 12 hours, it's $200 a day. So I don't know if that's anything to squabble about, and if customers are upset about that, I'll give up my position for them, let them try it for 6 months and see for, you know, for themselves that it's a big commitment. And I think any public service job is a big commitment, because once you step into it, you realize, shoot, and I've got a lot of people that depend on me here. And this is actually the first public job that I've ever had. And so I have really felt as though, you know, if I'm going to represent this customer base, you know, in my area, I need to be an informed citizen. I need to know the issues that surround the decisions that I am tasked with making for EPUD.
Yeah.
So, you know, there were issues. I don't know what those issues really were, but, you know, I think positions like this can be taken advantage of. And that's unfortunate, terribly unfortunate, because that's where you're talking about taxpayer money and or, you know, monies that somebody's paying for their utility bill. And when you get down to the basics here, and you're talking about a customer that has to make a decision between putting food on the table or keeping the house warm with electricity, you know, that's a tough place to be. So you better damn well take your job seriously if you're going to represent people, you know, like that. And I have no reason to not. If in fact if I didn't feel as though I could do the job, I definitely would not be talking to you on the phone today.
Yeah, and I imagine if you took your, you know, whatever you get in compensation and divided it by the actual hours you put into being a commissioner, you may not be making minimum wage according to Oregon anymore.
No, it's far from it. You know, I think, there's several other entry level jobs, you know, across America that you could step into and make better money at. So it's, I'm a college educated guy. I'm a successful business person. I've started businesses and built them up to where they, you know, employ other people, pay my taxes, and that in and of itself takes a tremendous amount of responsibility for one person. So, you know, I'm all for business. I think businesses are critically important to our economy locally, regionally, nationally, and electricity is just about as important as those businesses that we depend on for employment and for products and services. So it's a great responsibility, and I'm just enthusiastic to be here talking with you guys and visiting with neighbors in Lane County and discussing, you know, a topic that a lot of us don't really think about too often. Some of us do, but, you know, if the light switch goes on and the lights go on, we're happy as a clam. The minute they don't go on, suddenly we wonder what the heck went wrong and who's responsible. So,
yeah. We, I have to tell a secret on myself for you, because you may not be aware, but I used to work for Eugene Water and Electric Board on the water side of the utility, but I worked across into the engine, because I was in engineering. I also did work with the electric side quite often. And we always referred to ourselves as the silent utility, that as long as people put the switch or turned on the tap and something happened, no one cared about us.
Yeah,
but they flip that switch or turn that tap, and something didn't happen. Then suddenly they knew who we were.
I had an opportunity this summer, and job I still have on my plate, but. I got called up to Corvallis to look at a fraternity house that I was a member of at a California university earlier in life. And I went up there to look at at a number of problems that this fraternity house had relevant to mold, dry rot, asbestos issues, and none of it talked at all about energy issues. But when I walked into the place, having now, as a director for EPUD, my antennas were straight up, and I was looking at this building in a whole new light, and it was great because as of today, we have a relationship with Energy Trust of Oregon. Energy Trust of Oregon has looked at the house together with me, and have signed us up for a software called WegoWise. And WegoWise is a benchmarking software that both myself and the guys living in the fraternity house now have at on their computer screen. They're able to look at all of the improvements that have been made and will continue to be made to tighten up the envelope of this house
they were spending $28,000 annually on electricity and water and natural gas combined. And I
wow.
believe that after the improvements we were able to make to that fraternity house, we may very well be able to cut that energy consumption in half. So it's and when I walk into the house, I go up there at least once a week now, just to check in with the guys do a few things. But I walk into a dark house. I think, guys, you know, why aren't the lights on in here? Well, Bent, you know, we're trying to save energy. And I think, oh, son of a gun, you know, it's a beautiful thing, you know, to see these young guys, you know, all of a sudden thinking about those types of things. So this next summer, I'm actually thinking of through much of the renovation work we'll be doing there over the next 12 months about installing EV charging stations at the fraternity house so that the future of that fraternity house is prepared for students that are going to be driving to school in electric vehicles. And this particular fraternity will be ready for those types of students. And they seem very excited about that as well.
Mm.
So it's, I feel like, you know, it's, I think one of the things that got them so engaged was just that, you know, we couldn't find a general contractor to do the work. And as a, alumni and Housing Corp, member there, I told the house, I said, I can't justify allowing you guys to live in this house next fall with all of these problems. They either have to get fixed before school starts, or you guys are going to have to find someplace else to live until these problems do get fixed. And they said, well, Bent, you know, can we help you fix these problems? I said, it's going to take a lot of work, but I think we can do it. And I got product contributions from the concrete industry, and we've done just a remarkable job at transforming that place. And the kids have taken ownership in it. They have a pride in that place, and they're just ecstatic about the direction that things are going. But I just saw this change in their demeanor over the summer that was just really beautiful. And I think that this thing of energy conservation can be a really marvelous thing for our community. In fact, it's one of the goals I have. If I'm elected to serve on the board, I'd like to make Sub-District 2, Elmira, Vinita, Notai, Alvador, and those areas, you know, in between, I'd like to see Sub-District 2 become one of the most energy efficient districts of the five districts that EPUD services. In fact, if we can go a step further, maybe we can prove to be kind of a landmark, you know, in Lane County that is, you know, is showing that, you know, these neighborhoods are making the changes at home to turn their homes into really energy efficient environments, because that's really where things are heading. You know, Portland homeowners, they've got to get an energy audit before they sell their house. There has to be an energy score on that house before they can put it up for sale. The potential buyer has to know what he's going to be spending or she's going to be spending on utilities in addition to monthly mortgage. So to me, it's a smart thing. You know, technology has some valuable assets assigned to it that I think we just have to kind of learn to embrace as we kind of move forward here. And I'm enthusiastic to share what I know and help our customer base to the very best of my ability. And I'm there to protect them as well. I want to make sure that they get the very best care and service from their utility company.
Well, that sounds great, Ben. Is there any last things about why people should support you for this EPUG commissioner position before we let you go here?
Well, you know, probably be my extraordinarily good looks, but that's beside the point. I'm just kidding, you guys. But I just think that I've invested a lot in getting to know this industry, and I know that there's a lot more of me to invest and to keep up to speed on. I think that, you know, to say that you have been a director for a utility company in the past is nice, but it's not necessarily the kind of experience that somebody needs today, because the industry is so technology oriented, and new technologies are constantly at the forefront. I deal with that as a magazine publisher. You know, a couple of years ago, print started to die off. I didn't like it. You know, I thought, well, print is important. And I think to this day, many people still would agree that print is important. And it's a preferred way of gathering information, at least trusted information, for any industry that you might be involved in. But in publishing, you know, we've had to deal with a lot of technological changes too. And staying up with that and not being one of those magazines that has succumbed to that type of technological pressure, we are a strong magazine to this day. So in print and online, we're one of the most, you know, well-recognized publications worldwide. That's a big statement, but that's the truth. You know, I think that type of embrace towards technology is something that I can bring to EPUD as a director, and I'm comfortable in that space.
Well, great, Ben. Thank you for calling in today and spending some time with us. This is one of the reasons why I do the Bo's Nose show, so that folks can hear from local people and about local issues, and nothing gets more local than your power company, and right down to the sub-district of EPUD that you will represent. So I appreciate your service representing us on the EPUD board now, and good luck in your run for, as I guess it is re-election, isn't it? You currently are the incumbent.
Yeah, that I am, and it is my first election, but I appreciate that, and I'm anxious to get to that election day and past it, but this process has been good for me, and it's getting me out and talking to people, and that I've thoroughly enjoyed. So thank you for your time today, guys.
All right, thank you, Ben. Have a great evening.
You too. Thanks.
So that was Bent Mickelson, who is running for EPUD Board of Directors out here in the Veneta area, I guess Subdistrict 2, and had some interesting thoughts on the future of electricity there and how important conservation is going to be. We'll be switching gears on the Bo's Nose show. We're going to get back to what were they thinking in a minute here, and also might talk a little PERS. But I like talking about what you want to talk about. So if there's something that, Mr. Mickelson said that spurred a thought in your mind, or if there's something else on your mind you want to talk about, give us a call at the Bo's Nose Show, 646-721-9887, and just press 1 and you can get in on the conversation. Again, that's 646-721-9887. Just press 1. So I started out with what were they thinking. I'm going to get back to what were they thinking, because I barely seem to scratch the surface with BLM and, burning too late at night, causing wrecks on 126 and requiring the highway to be shut down. And, when the calls actually came in and the Lane Fire Authority got out there at 3 o'clock in the morning, there were still fires smoldering out in those wetlands. They did not get the fires extinguished before they left there that night. Just to give you an idea, just, you know, what were they thinking? Not to mention, it's still wild. It's still fire season. You know, how could you walk away from something that was still smoldering and burning like that? Which gets me to my other, what were they thinking? And I kind of previewed this online on Facebook. You know, it's not just the BLM, it's the U.S. Forest Service. So we heard a couple of weeks back that the U.S. Forest Service was converting their firefighting down on some of the big fires in Oregon from, you know, attacking and trying to put them out to what they call cleanup phase or something like that, where they're going to start trying to pull some of the roads out and restore the environment, because they felt they had gotten past, you know, the need to try and contain these fires. Well, sure enough, no sooner do they pull all those firefighting crews off and they've just got restoration crews on the ground, that the Klondike fire explodes, breaks containment line, and now we're having to evacuate people from their homes because I don't know what the U.S. Forest Service was thinking. We didn't get hardly any moisture, and then we had a prediction of 10 straight days of dry weather coming after that moisture. But they pulled those crews off there, and next thing you know, we've got the Klondike fire, you know, chasing people out of their homes, smoke intrusion in Coos Bay area of the coast, and we're back, you know, back where we were. And I just, you know, what was the Forest Service thinking? You know, they've been a consistent topic on the "what were they thinking" segment sometimes. I mean, you know, we talked about how they allowed last year's you know, Chetco bar fire explode from a less than 5 acre lightning strike, which was allowed to smolder for weeks and turned into one of the worst fires Oregon's ever seen. And now they've taken this Klondike fire and walked away from it while it was still burning and then let it re-flare up and break containment lines. So, you know, what was the U.S. Forest Service thinking? You know, so there's a couple fire-related, what were they thinking? And it's a good reminder. It is still fire season. Outdoor burning is banned in Lane County. You cannot do any sort of burning of yard debris in Lane County legally, and they postponed the burning season to at least October 27th at this point, and that's provided we get some rain between now and then. It is, you know, even though it doesn't seem quite like fire season, it's not 90 degrees out. The last stretch of weather we've had, with it getting up in the 70s during the day, but dew points down in the 30s, we're seeing afternoon humidities in the teens. So all of that fuel that was so dry this summer has dried right back out. And we're in moderate to high fire danger in most of our forest again. And with these east winds blowing at certain times of day in certain areas of the state, it is really hazardous. And that's basically that recipe for disaster that we ran into down there when the Klondike fire broke containment, was those gusty east winds and that very low humidity just combined to allow that fire to flare up and break containment. So be very careful out there. You know, it's hunting season now. As you guys are out in the woods, you know, folks are going out looking for mushrooms and all that. Just be really careful. Don't want to be the person that ends up causing somebody to lose a home or to unnecessarily burn a forest. So careful with fire. I have one more, what were they thinking? And this one's a little bit, not fire involved, but it's just one of those things where something I came upon. So as I'm driving to a meeting in Veneta, actually it was a meeting in Florence Monday, and left my house. I'm driving down Territorial Highway from my house, and I go through a school zone, you know, right before I leave Elmira. And just past the school zone, there's, you know, basically a birthday party of police and fire lights, you know, all on a parking lot at this little place called the Hilltop Market there. And I'm like, what the heck is going on there? You know, did they get robbed again or something? So later on in the day when I had a chance to try and find out and kind of ask through Facebook and a few other places, I was able to piece together the story of what happened in the morning. Now, mind you, this was 8 a.m. in the morning. What turns out that happened was some guy and his buddy got in a Jeep somewhere back in Veneta, and apparently the guy driving didn't know how to drive a stick shift, but the guy that actually owned the Jeep was in the passenger side and was coaching him on how to drive the stick shift. But he was all over the road and weaving and stuff like that. And there were witnesses, you know, that saw him doing that. And apparently he got down into Elmira and almost into the school zone when he decided he was going to pull into the Hilltop Market. I guess that was the reason they were out running around. And in making that left turn, completely missed the turn and ran into a power pole, an EPUD pole, speaking of EPUD. And then backed off the pole and then pulled into the market. And that's when police and fire were called because somebody witnessed the accident and called 911. And when they showed up, turns out, lo and behold, they were drunk or high on something. But so we got a Dewey in a school zone at 8 in the morning. Now, mind you, who is partying at 8 in the morning? And all I can think of in my mind is, you know, the guy driving didn't know how to drive a stick, which was part of the reason why he was all over the place. And the owner of the vehicle was in the other seat. I could just imagine the conversation before they left their place in Veneta, wherever they left from over there. That's at least the first place eyewitnesses saw them weaving in and out of the lanes crossing the center line and stuff. It was, you know, hey, man, I'm just too stoned to drive. Why don't you drive? Oh, I can't drive a stick. Oh, I'll tell you how to drive a stick. Look, you drive. I'll do the shifter. You just have to press the pedals. And I could just see these two idiots rolling down the road. Oh, thank you. Know, it's just thankful they didn't kill a kid. But, you know, what were they thinking? A Dewey, 8 in the morning, through school zones, hitting a power pole. Oh, gosh. Yeah. But, yeah, it looked like a birthday party there. There were at least 3 state police cars, a county car, and Lane Fire Authority trucks in this parking lot. What were those guys thinking? But I was just going through that conversation in my mind of that the two dudes, you know, all you know, medically challenged or inebriated somehow or another. I don't know what exactly they were on, but man, just what was the decision making to, you know, you don't know how to drive a clutch car? I'll tell you how. I'll be in the passenger seat. We'll be good. Just gotta go get some more beer.
You know, that reminds me of Cheech and Chong.
Yeah, that was what came to my mind when I heard, you know, started piecing together this story. Is holy mackerel! I thought things like that went away with in the 80s sometime. You know?
Hey man, how's my driving? I think we're parked, man.
Yeah, that was about it. Yeah, what were they thinking? Oh my goodness. Rather long, what were they thinking segment this week, but man, there was just too much to pick on this week. I still can't believe BLM and starting that fire after 4 o'clock in the evening when they had a permit that said have them out by 4 o'clock, not start them by 4 o'clock. Yes, and causing all those wrecks on Highway 126. Wanted to mention, though, before we run out of time on the Bo's Nose Show, the Secretary of State came out with an audit, you know, the Audit Division of Secretary of State that audits various state programs. Well, they audited the PERS program, but not auditing the finances of PERS, but they did a performance audit on the IT, you know, the information technology side of PERS. And boy, were they scathing in their report. Basically, PERS has been unable to modernize their information technology to where they are not prepared for any sort of major interruption in their service. Now, mind you, PERS is responsible for writing $400 million worth of checks to retirees a month. So you can imagine if there's some major disruption in the electrical grid or the communications or whatever else that causes, you know, something to go down for PERS, their system backup to writing those checks completely, it will fail. So yeah, on top of, you know, whatever disaster that might cause that, suddenly we're going to lose $400 million a month out of, you know, most of those retirees live in Oregon, out of the economy, because they won't have the ability to issue checks.
Yeah, but Jay, they got the best Commodore 64s the money can buy.
Yeah, apparently so. So just one more occasion of our state government, you know, being, you know, handling information technology so well. Yeah. What's that? What was that jingle that the Oregon health plan used to use for?
Oh, that was Oracle.
Yeah. But they had that little jingle, you know, when you're going to be able to sign up for the plan. Remember, they're doing all those promotions, spent all that money on the advertising, and they couldn't get the software to work. Oh, gosh. I wish we have to find that, because we'll have to use that sometime whenever we're talking about this. But, yeah, so I just wanted to let people know that, you know, the state of Oregon, once again, is handling information technology well. And I know that just plays right to you, being that you're an IT person.
I don't know if I want to admit that right now, but at least I don't work for the government.
Yeah, no, you do a better. Yeah, I'm sure you do a better job in protecting your work against some of these things. But and you know, there are a couple other things. You know, maybe we'll get to talk about in the future Bo's Nose show, because it's just coming out in the news now. But Eugene's decided to take the old City Hall lot, which they still own, you know, which is just a bare gravel, and they're going to put a great big old tent there for homeless people. So be looking for that coming in the next couple weeks.
Okay, they should at least put parking meters in.
Yeah, so just you know, that decision, I think, came from the city council at lunchtime today, so I haven't had a chance quite to digest it. I will say one thing. It's partly in response to that protest that's on county property right now, and because of the Ninth Circuit Court's decision about not being able to punish people for camping illegally on public property unless there's a shelter for them to go to, this tent will operate as that place for those folks to go to. So it will allow the city to deal with those campers in a way that doesn't violate their civil rights as defined under the Ninth Circuit Court's decision around homeless, you know, criminalizing camping for homeless people being cruel and unusual punishment, you know, basically a Fourth Amendment argument.
So does that mean that loitering and criminal trespass and all the other fun stuff doesn't apply anymore?
If you know, that's one of the reasons why it's get, you know, you're suddenly seeing all this camping on sidewalks in cities in the Northwest that are covered by the Ninth Circuit. There's a decision about Boise was arresting folks for illegal camping in downtown. And it was determined that was considered cruel and unusual punishment because there was no alternative for those folks.
Okay.
Yeah. I know it's an okay one, but you know, it's the current state of the law until somebody decides to appeal it up to the Supreme Court, if the Supreme Court will hear it. So as far as we're concerned, we're in the Ninth Circuit's jurisdiction. We have to follow that guidance. It's one of the reasons why we haven't moved that camp from the butterfly lot in downtown Eugene, is because of that Ninth Circuit Court decision, which is only, it's not that old of a decision. I think it was issued a couple months back.
Well, look how working for Portland.
Yeah. So we're about done with the Bo's Nose show here. I want to thank people for listening. Next week, I am going to be in jolly old England, eating some fish and chips at a 300-year-old pub, I hope, or something like that, when the Bo's Nose show's on, and drinking some good English beer. I appreciate everybody listening. We'll probably be doing a replay of a previous episode next week, unless I get a chance to record an interview between now and then. Thank you for listening to the Bo's Nose show, and we'll be back live in a couple weeks, probably right after the election. So that should be an interesting show. So thank you for listening to the Bo's Nose show, coming to you live from beautiful downtown Elmira. Have a great week, and have a great couple weeks if I don't talk to you before then.